Welcome back to Radio Juxtapose. My name's Doug Gillen. Coming up today, I'm in conversation with painter Ben Wakeling at London's Basement Space. You're listening to Radio Juxtapose, the podcast arm of the legendary Juxtapose magazine, in which we regularly pick away the brains of artists in order to get a better insight from their experiences, motivations, career paths, and whatever else comes up over the course of the conversation. It's good to be back with you. Not gonna lie, today's episode was a bit of a curveball. Last week, I was asked to do some filming for the Basement Space in London for an artist I actually didn't know too much about. And if you're listening just now and you're not too familiar yourself, you'd also be forgiven, as this was recorded the day before his first ever solo show. This period marks quite a significant transition for London-born and bred Ben Wakeling, who, despite having only just entered the gallery world, has a lifetime of experience behind him. Working as an artist in residence for the National Health Service, Ben utilizes creativity to help those in psychiatric facilities in the city, a world in which he's experienced from multiple angles. On canvas, he creates in a similar way as he does on the street, using fire extinguishers and spray paint to create bold, aggressive marks layered upon splashes of color in compositions that cannot hide the raw energy from which they're made. Very much an outsider artist, Ben creates in a way free from the restrictive formalities imposed by institutional art education. For those that listened to our previous episode with Evan and Christian Rex Van Minnen, there was a line Christian delivered that stuck with me ever since hearing it, in which he says,
"I want to see evidence of the human heart and soul in painting. If I don't see that, it's just junk food."
And within minutes of talking with Ben for the first time, I was overwhelmed with heart and soul, and I knew I had to try and get this on here. As I mentioned, it wasn't intended to be a podcast, so the format might seem a little bit more formalized than usual, but hopefully you'll understand why I thought it had to have a home here on Radio Juxtapose. If you do enjoy this, please let us know, let Ben know, and if you can, head over to check out the show at Basement Space for yourself. This conversation contains some really sensitive themes of grief, mental health, and loss from the very start. But like I said, I think there's a good bit of heart and soul in there too. You're listening to Radio Juxtapose in conversation with Ben Wakeling.
Last year, unfortunately, both my parents, my mum and dad, passed away. Unexpectedly, the way it happened was quite savage as well. You know, my mum, she died quite badly in pain. And so I guess I wasn't sure if it was okay to maybe bring up, or I guess because it's not even been it happened last year. So that's constantly on my mind. When Greg and Lara came forward with an invitation for the show, I thought, should I be doing it? Should I be moving on? It's still at the forefront of everything and whatever I'm doing. I guess this, doing my first solo show, this will be for them. They're with me. Just wanted to keep them in mind, really. Because it's incredibly difficult, hardest thing I've ever done. And my mum, she's the most important person to me from the very start till she's my dad's a great man, but you know, my mum is, I'm such a mother's boy. You only get one mum, one dad. Yeah, so.
How has that impacted the creative process?
So some of this work being shown was made last year as well. Maybe I'm too close to it. Maybe it's too soon. So I'm not sure how to articulate how important or relevant it is, but it must be somehow, I think, because I'm beginning to grieve. I think it's the first time, actually, I've realised that I might be able to move on from painting maybe years down the line. I think I've... I've really understood that I don't do it because I enjoy it. I don't do it because I want to have a career. Obviously, I do. But I've realized that it's out of a necessity to keep surviving. It's out of to keep staying afloat. It's more, it's therapy for, it's actual therapy. And I don't want to be in therapy for the rest of my life. So it's quite, in relation to the work, it's quite scary actually, because I might be able to see a life beyond art, which might sound weird.
It's a weird way, it's a weird frame of mind to go into for solo, yeah. Just, I'd say it's different, yeah.
Yeah, for sure, exactly.
So you say that painting is your form of therapy for you.
Yeah.
So in what way can you tell me where you are in that process of creating mentally?
I think because of the dramatic life experiences that I've had, painting or making art or graph, it's the only thing that's been constant that runs with that. And it tends to come out in those complicated moments or situations. So it's more of an uncontrollable urge. You know, I think that authenticity is really, that's really important to me. And hopefully that can be conveyed in the self-portraits of the work.
Has it helped the grieving process, creating this work?
I want to lie and say yes, but maybe not. I think maybe it has helped the grieving process to an extent. It's forcing me to front up to the situation. When I was writing my mum and dad's eulogy, I was working on a canvas, and it was the only time I've actually, so there was a lot of letters and words coming out. There was a lot of text coming out. And because in the final moments with my mum, she was fully paralysed apart from part of her hand, and she was able to, unfortunately, only scribble. So she couldn't communicate what she needed, what she was feeling, how much pain she was in.
Can I ask what happened?
She was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, rare form pancreatic cancer. And she lasted 7 weeks. At the same time, a few weeks after, my dad, I was trying to get my dad to the hospital to say goodbye to mum. And, you know, he wasn't answering his phone until he finally picked up. And he told me he had just been diagnosed with a rare form of stomach cancer. And he was, you know, being taken into A&E. So he lasted a couple of months. My mum lasted 7 weeks. And I went from burying her to my dad's side, from burying her to then going to my dad's side and helping care for him. And then, yeah, burying him and writing his eulogy. So those, I'm not sure if you've ever had, you know, I'm not sure if you've ever written a eulogy, but it's a really, it's a massive head fuck. And it's an incredibly, it's an incredible honor to do as well. And that started coming out in the paintings as well. So yes, it does help. And no, it doesn't, because it sort of brings me back into it. And it sort of breaks your heart all over again.
So that you don't want to be in therapy for the rest of your life?
I don't want to be in therapy for the rest of my life.
Why?
Because I think it's important to move on. I think maybe I don't want to be stuck in the same place. I want to continue to shift and maneuver through life and live through life and perhaps with having a diagnosis and staying in therapy, that's quite a painful place to be in. And if I am able to move on, I think that's a, I would love to know what that feels like.
So did the idea of the show come, was that already in process before this happened, or was this after?
Yeah, so the this show wasn't built around that, not at all. I think just a way, maybe this is my mum and dad looking out for me, and because I've always dreamt of having a solo show, having my work in galleries, and maybe this was them sort of looking down at me and giving me, there's an opportunity here. Greg and Lara from the gallery have been amazing, really supportive. And maybe the stars aligned a little bit. Well, all this work I've been doing for the last couple of years has a sense of belonging. There's a real connection between all the works. And I think it's just all happened at the right time, maybe. I guess you need a bit of luck. Everyone needs a bit of luck. And that's really seemed to bring it all together. And I have been able to step away. They selected the works. They helped position the show. And it seems to make a lot of sense. There's a lot of consistency, I hope. And I think past traumas, past life experiences put me in this position to create. That happened with my parents, and that maybe sparked where we are today.
How do you construct a painting? Where is that? Do you have a destination in mind? Do you have a...
It's more uncontrollably visual vomit. Like this, it's an outpouring. It's very I don't know how to... It's very unconsidered, very unplanned. It's more of an eruption. When I work it, it's been described as quite... It's quite raw, it's very quick. There's a lot of emotion. I wouldn't know how to begin to sit back and think, this is where I need to be, this is where I want to be. It's more of an outcome. And I think that's what makes me think this is closer to therapy than an art practice, maybe, because it's intuitive. I'm not premeditative, which I'm a bit shy or embarrassed to admit, because sometimes I think, trained artists might have a plan, have a goal, and try to execute that, where this is an outpouring. It's more, fuck, I need to do it right now. And whether that's on a wall, on a canvas, inside a building, that just sort of comes out. And I've learned to be in the best possible situation for when that feeling happens. So I live in my studio, so I'm surrounded by it. So that really sets me up to be able to do that.
In amongst the chaos, and there is a scrambling, a sense of scrambling to latch onto some kind of physical form. What's guiding that? I heard you refer to it as a self-portrait earlier.
When I was younger, I was engaging in a service called CAMHS, which is Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. And so that's a service from the NHS.
As a participant or as an employee?
As a participant. They call them service users now instead of a patient. And anyway, so I was Must have been at a stage where I was non-verbal. Anyway, so I used to scribble on these papers, and the only thing I can really remember is that I'm not sure if they were a therapist, a clinician, a psychotherapist. I'm not sure who that person was, but they led me to they sort of led me to an understanding that all these marks I was doing was a self-portrait. They were quite figurative, but they were, it wasn't like a clean portrait, you know, a beautiful clean portrait or something. It was, you know, they were quite scribbles, and they led me to consider or think about, you know, these could be self-portraits. And that really scared the life out of me, because some of them were in sort of situations, or it just really frightened me. Then, you know, school came, and, you know, I wasn't great in school. It wasn't until I was much older that I started understanding how I had access to art. I didn't really know art history. I knew sort of French Impressionism, and that was about it. Moving through that, I started to understand what a self-portrait could be. And I think I still have those habits. You know, some of the paintings, you can see a more definitive figure. These nude figures morph, they change.
Or how did that idea of it being considered a self-portrait impact how you were feeling about yourself and the way that you were reviewing yourself?
Yeah, there's lots of work that I would never show, or I'm not ready to show, because they're quite, I'd be too conscious of what other people think, and I'd be too worried about what people think. But it's also important to sit within, to be honest with yourself and sit within those outcomes. And this is where it becomes complicated, because I've always loved looking at art. You know, I've always found it, oh, that's what high society is. And it's, you know, when I was much younger, I thought, oh, I would love to be able to have a job title called an artist, because it's such a high profile. I always saw it as, you know, an achievement. Because I was bringing my own real life experiences into the work, I just thought that's not what people would want, or that's not how art's made. And that could be detrimental to my life. For example, I'd be worried to show some work because I wouldn't want to get sectioned, or I wouldn't want, like, there could be, well, so not an outcome, there could be a result into someone seeing my work and saying, well, your freedom might have to be taken away, because I've been in that situation, and that's a really fine line to walk. Like, there's some drawings that we're going to show, and that was when I was in police custody, and because of my diagnosis, because of my history, I was given special allowance for some few broken, like, to have some few broken crayons. And I think that one of the sergeants was, they must have taken out some plain paper from their printer at the sergeant's desk, so I was given three bits of paper and I was allowed to drawn it, really. But I knew that would have been assessed as well, because I know what I know. I knew then that could have been used, not as evidence or anything, but when the psych doctor comes along, they'll analyze that, and that could, they, you know, they can use that information.
I mean, this is an obvious question. Why do you work in mental health services?
So I learned recently that my mum was a psychiatric nurse many moons ago, but in 2014, mums being mums, you know, they look out, you know, they're always worried. She sent through this job applicate. I was struggling for work, and she sent through this job app, and basically I became a cleaner in a really run-down unit. It's a community secure unit, and what happens is patients are bussed from hospital into this care home. There's a cinema there. There was like a special swimming pool and a very small sports hall. And anyway, long story short, I think it was my second day, and I was sort of cleaning the toilets, and I ended up scribbling on the wall. I had a pen on me, and I just started scribbling on the wall, and this patient got up and walked over, and I was like, you know, get involved. And so we're there, and all of a sudden there's me, three other patients, and we're just scribbling on this wall. This staff member ends up walking past, loses his shit. He's like, one, who the fuck are you? And why are you vandalizing? It's a hallway, it's quite a clinical hallway. So it's my second day. By the afternoon, I'm in front of one of the directors of the place. I'm in a meeting with the director and this staff member, about to get a formal dismissal. So the staff member who stopped me starts explaining the situation, what had happened, describing what had happened. And during this conversation, so the staff member is absolutely livid, but the director, his ears pricked up, and he was like, oh, patient X, Y, and Z were with you. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry. You know, it's totally my fault. And he was really interested in the fact that they stood up, they were engaged, and they were scribbling with me. I didn't know any, you know, I wasn't, this is all in hindsight. So, you know, I'm there, just kept apologizing. I'm really, really, really sorry. And by the end of the meeting, he turned around and said, will you come back tomorrow? We'll get you a few sheets of paper and a few pencils, and you can just see if you can hang out with them. And that was it. You know, that you still got your cleaning duties and things like that. So I ended up, from being about to be fired, I got rehired as some art guy, cleaner. And within a couple of days, I was begging, borrowing, stealing all these art equipment, whatever I could get my hands on to bring in to work and to just hang out with these patients. It wasn't in the job role. It wasn't acknowledged. And that happened within a few days. Fast forward, within a couple of months, a doctor came in to find me, because it turns out there was a patient was talking about me in their therapy back in the hospital, and they were talking I must have been brought up. And anyway, this guy was so interested about some bloke, cleaner bloke, painting and drawing with these, you know, with a few of these individuals. And that was the start of me beginning to understand mental health, therapy, how art can be used as a vehicle, perhaps, to help narrate or converse complex problems, feelings.
How can art impact or open up conversations around mental health? What function does it provide?
So I've developed a tool or a way of working in recent years, and we've named it the therapy wall approach. And basically, so take Northeast London. It's a very multicultural part of the world. You get all languages, all shapes and sizes, you know, you get all types of people. And we, through working on a wall, so the idea is that we start off with a blank wall, and after every session, the wall is always whitewashed. And they're able to, and so there's freedom. So we're able, I've now got permission to bring in spray paint into the hospital, and so we use all different types of medium. And because they're able to, because they know it's going to be whitewashed, we'll document it with a photo. But because they will understand that it's whitewashed, that can often trigger honesty. So they can say, fuck you, and did it, you know, get some stuff off their chest. And then with the next session, after you know, it's whitewashed, and they might do that again. But after you've got past that anger or those initial responses, you can then start discussing. They might start bringing up relevant issues. So other clinicians started seeing this and found it really useful for their practice as well. And so because people might struggle to articulate in English or to find the right words in any language, these visuals or symbols, or they might be able to start deconstructing what's in these images, which help them engage with their patient. So I think there's moments like that where art can help someone else understand what's going on with that, with you or that individual. For me personally, art painting is really exciting. I find it really exhilarating. I find it a way to navigate away from normal life, real life, current life. It allows me to dance and sing and to move and to remember. It brings up feelings and memories, and so that might help me cry or laugh, or it can really teleport me into other dimensions, and that's an incredible release. Painful, but enjoyable. Heartbreakingly beautiful. I feel confident when I'm there in that moment. So for me, that's how it helps me, I think.
So I'm just a guy coming in off the street, walking into this space, taking a look at this work for the first time. How do you think that person would describe the artist that's painted these paintings? You have to go existential on this one, right? You have to disconnect from everything that you know about yourself.
I think people probably think it's quite naive, childlike. Hopefully they would find some authenticity in it, because that's really important. They might think, I could do that, well, easy. Like sometimes I show some of my best mates, you know, who aren't in the art world at all, and they're like, is that a dragon? Is that an apple? And it's not at all. So, that, you know, I think some people struggle to see it. But hopefully that's because it's so complicated, people just need a bit of time, and it's not that easily readable. And I'm okay with that. Yeah, I enjoy that. I think it's quite a hard thing to work out.
Where does the idea of abstraction and the history of that, does that factor in? Do you follow or understand or want to understand the codes and the rules of what those before you may have followed?
In terms of art history and understanding where abstraction comes from, I'm still learning. As I said, I really struggled at school. I didn't have access to certain classes for a period. So it wasn't until much later on in adult life that I started having the patience to start reading up on a lot of the history. It was mainly through life experience. So I think my first entry point into art was through Graph. Well, what I would now see as Graph.
What was the attraction for Graph?
Running away from home. And then just do it. I really wanted to do something naughty or something bad, but I didn't want to do other things that other people were doing. Like I didn't want to hurt anyone else. I didn't want to do certain things, but I really needed to fuck some shit up. I needed to, this urge. And I came across a runaway once, and I ended up spending the night in some garden shed. There was like a rugby pit. It was a rugby pitch type. I think it was during the season, an off season. So the lines were, I remember it a bit looking like a rugby pitch, but they had this shed, and ended up sleeping in this shed. Came across this can that paints the white lines on grass. Stole that. I was just spraying it, not knowing, I was never with a Graph crew or anything like that. So I ended up just spraying it and just, oh, okay, I could do that. And then I knew I should probably have a tag. So then that was my entry point into Graph, really, was looking what was on the Northern Line and then trying to replicate that. But I quickly got bored with that, so I went back to scribbling, and then it looked like the figures again. At that time, that wasn't very cool to do, so I was never really accepted into any Graph. Like, the kids in my school were just like, nah. So I just carried on with that, and it just looked really, I didn't know what the word abstract. So learning about abstract came because I just thought I was making really shit work. And it really annoyed writers. I just sort of doubled down and just carried on doing it. And then, yeah, into my sort of mid-20s and stuff, I discovered art scenes, and there was places in London which were more contemporary, and got up the courage to go to art galleries and things like that. So it's quite self-taught. It's more through a lot of mistakes, I think, maybe.
How do you feel walking in here, see your work hung in a gallery, about to go into your first show? What does that... There's so many different avenues that I can only begin to imagine. How does it feel?
So yesterday, I walked in and it was incredibly overwhelming. It's a huge achievement. It's a life dream. I felt incredibly guilty because my heart skipped a beat. I was really happy, and then I felt guilty for being happy. It's really overwhelming. I've always wanted it hung on a white wall, these large expressionistic paintings, you know, on a white wall, and people giving a shit and asking questions, and I've dreamt about it so much for so long. And I always felt intimidated because I didn't go to art school, didn't hang out with certain people, or, you know, I just felt it was such an unachievable thing that to see it in a gallery in my hometown, in the neck of the woods that I grew up in, is, I just wish my mum and dad were here. It's incredibly heartbreakingly beautiful and powerful, and I just hope people can get down with it, enjoy it, be moved by it, see themselves in it, understand me maybe a bit more, or them understand themselves and other people in their life who are important to them. I've always had this sort of reoccurring image where someone's looking at the work and it just stops them dead in their tracks and, you know, sort of captures them for a couple of minutes. I'm currently living my dream. Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. Indescribable.
That was Ben Wakeling for Radio Juxtapose. I hope you kind of understand why I thought that was an important interview to try and find a home here on the podcast. Just listening back as I've edited this and put it together, there's 101 different avenues I'd like to explore on this theme and this relationship between art and mental health. And I think there's something so raw and honest about the way that Ben opened up and the role that art plays in his relationship with his mental health. And ultimately, I think that hearing people talk about art in this way inevitably has a positive effect for people that might not be able to, that might be in similar positions or maybe hadn't realized that they were in sort of similar positions. If you did enjoy this, please do let us know. And if you'd like to hear more on this subject, also let us know and we'll see what we can do. As always, thanks for listening. We'll be back with you guys real soon. Till then, take care of yourselves and each other.